Minnesota Reads is a new feature on Northland Morning. We feature Minnesota authors talking about their work. This morning, Dr. Anton Troyer joins us. He's a professor of Ojibwe at Bemidji State University, and he's the executive director of their American Indian Resource Center. He's the author of The Assassination of Hole in the Day. Dr. Troyer, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Nice to have you on the line with us this morning. Was your primary motivation to tell this particular story, kind of a murder mystery, or was it kind of a springboard or an opportunity to research Indian history in a new way?
It was a bit of both. You know, everybody loves a good murder mystery, and that this is. An Ojibwe chief named Bugwune Gijik, or Hole in the Day, was assassinated in the mid-1800s. But as I dug into his story, I found that his story was a perfect window into how the nature of tribal leadership changed from a clan-based hereditary chieftainship model to an entirely new and different dynamic. And then it was also a perfect window into how the land went from native hands to non-native hands, and the entire political and cultural landscape of Minnesota was changed forever.
One of the things that's fascinating about your book, and usually the process is not the first thing that the reader keeps in mind, but one of the things that you emphasize is that you did a lot of research using oral history. And how did that oral history benefit your research and supplement the accounts of these events that were already in existence?
Yeah, it's something that's pretty different about this particular book. I think, honestly, looking at the many thousands of books written on Native American history, very few of them actually directly engage tribal languages or tribal people. It's kind of weird because no one would write a book on German history without going to Germany and speaking to a lot of Germans and digging in their archives. But people write lots of books about Native people without directly connecting to those places or people. So oral history was a way to get Native voices in there. One example would be in 1862, this is, you know, right in the midst of the U.S.-Dakota War in 1862, there was a lot going on in Ojibwe country. Fort Ripley, which is in central Minnesota, in the Brainerd Lakes region, kind of near Little Falls, there was an army fort there, and Hole in the Day was threatening to attack it. At the same time, the chaplain's writing in his journal, "We're all going to die, there's only 20 soldiers here, and there's thousands of Indians around." And then a couple hundred warriors come from Mille Lacs and surround the fort and then face out to protect it from would-be attackers. Now, that much you can tell from what the army chaplain's writing in his journal, but the really interesting questions, which are like, why would that happen? Why were Ojibwe people not working together? Why would some want to protect the fort and some want to attack it? You can't tell any of that from the archival stuff. When I was talking to Melvin Eagle, who's one of the drum chiefs and elders over at Mille Lacs, still alive today, and he said, "You want to know why that happened? I'll tell you why. That was my grandfather that took those warriors over there to protect Fort Ripley, and here's what he had to say about why that happened." And all of a sudden, the oral history wasn't, as it's often characterized, someone whispering in someone's ear to someone else, and gets totally distorted at the other end. It was some of the most meaningful information that was able to speak to the archival stuff and tell the story in a new and different way.
And you write that you found a lot of consistency, that it wasn't a situation in every respect, at least, where you found that the native version of events was completely different than the version of events already in existence. But as you mentioned just a moment ago, as you illustrated, frequently it was explaining motivations and adding additional details that had been missing.
Right. If you want to know what Native people were thinking, you're not going to figure it out by reading what Alexander Ramsey wrote. You know, you need to speak to Native people if you want their perspective and understanding. And in some places, those are the only pieces of information to tell parts of the story. And then comparing and contrasting, you know, a variety of perspectives, I think really adds a lot of richness to the material. And the engagement with tribal language stuff, you know, matters a lot too. Native people have different ways of looking at the world, and that world, those world views are embedded in tribal languages.
That was my next question, because I wanted you to expand on that a little bit. Talk about the role of language in your research. You point out that Ojibwe is a verbally based language.
Right.
What is the significance of that?
Well, there are a lot of important details that are embedded in language. So, for example, in the Ojibwe language, the word we have for an elder, Gichiaya'a, literally means great being. And the word for an elderly woman, Mindemuye, literally means one who holds things together and describes the role of the family matriarch. Now, in English, you got old woman, elderly woman, aged woman, and no
senior
wonder.
Citizen.
Yeah, no wonder everybody wants to get, you know, a facelift and a Botox injection and dye their hair and won't admit how old they really are. There's a way that language embodies worldview, and there's a way that language also shapes that worldview. So operating in Ojibwe, you don't actually have to say things like respect your elders. It's built right in with any word you could possibly use to talk about them. And the same is true with concepts around leadership. You know, what does it mean to be a warrior? About the names for every single place, they speak volumes on perspective and knowledge and different ways of looking at things, and that's what really adds richness to the story.
Dr. Troyer, I wish we had more time to talk about the book itself. Again, it's a fascinating murder mystery. You learn the story of a man and his, well, actually a man and his father, a pair of leaders that were absolutely linchpins for an entire community. And when Holin the Day was assassinated, so many, many things fell apart.
Right.
But it is such a living part of history because the repercussions and the ripples from that act in 1868, if I'm remembering correctly, are still being felt with Native people today. And I think a huge part of the significance of the book is that you should be able to read it and look around you and say, well, this explains a lot.
Yeah. I think it really does, and it's kind of astounding that the way we teach people today in our K-12 institutions, they learn more about the history of the Roman Empire across the ocean and more about animals from across the ocean than they do about the animals in the woods around us or the history of the land that they live on. And there's some pretty easy remedies, aside from, you know, shamelessly self-promoting my work and saying buy that book, but there's a lot of new work being done that's shedding a lot of light on that, and I think it's incumbent upon all of us to learn more and more deeply about the first people of the land.
Dr. Troyer, thank you so very much for taking some time to join us this morning. It was wonderful to talk with you, and thank you for your book also.
Yes, thank you.
Dr. Anton Troyer is a professor of Ojibwe at Bemidji State University. He's the executive director of their American Indian Resource Center, and he's the author of The Assassination of Holin the Day. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD, with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.